Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Issue 20.5. This is reviews, baby.
And reviews!
Boy, do we have some reviews for you today.
There are going to be some ups, there's going to be some downs.
Yeah.
I have a strange feeling that this is going to be a slightly longer episode because of the number of titles that we all read this week.
Yeah, we actually crossed over on a good bit, which is a little shocking.
Shocker!
Yeah, especially considering how much different stuff that we all read.
Yeah, we're starting to mind meld, though,
like,
as the episodes go.
We are one. We are Capes and Scales West.
I have been chosen!
Alright, well, before we get too creepy and culty, if we had a camera right now, you would see that we're all wearing black robes with the pentagram drawn on the table, but that's aside from the point.
And
so,
which
comics do you have to sacrifice for?
I will sacrifice Dr. Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows to the future. this is a dark Dr. Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows written by Jeff Lemire with art by Max Fuimara.
It's also Dark Horse, which I don't think we've ever really reviewed any Dark Horse.
We didn't do too much, which is good.
I don't know. I feel like we haven't done any before.
So this is kind of a spin-off of the Black Hammer franchise, which I've actually never read. Heard good things. Not a huge fan of the artist, so me being the snob that I am. But I picked up this one basically because of the art, because of Max Fuimara. It is a pulpy 1960s superhero story of a superhero creating himself out of science, working on a project.
Science.
I guess it's 1940s, but it feels
I think I saw 1941. I feel like I'm already being lied to.
But it feels like, I guess you're right. 1940s makes more sense because it's golden age style.
Oh, yeah.
And it feels really, really fun, and it gets really dark near the end. And I can't wait to read the rest of this series. It's brilliant and beautiful, and I'm really happy that there's a superhero with super curly hair, because
as I say with my forehead curl.
Identify.
Exactly. I love science-y superheroes, and I think that, not to get into full spoilers on this, but like creating a weapon for a government and it turns out to be something really cool and crazy. So yeah, that's an awesome one. I'm going to move on to New Mutants Dead Souls number one. I am not often super high on X-Men stuff.
No one ever is. What?
But I like to give it a shot, especially after the surprise of X-Men Red. So this is, I'm going to get the creator names really quickly. It's Matthew Rosenberg with art by Adam Gorham. This fucking rocked. Like, this was so what I want from a mutant team together. A band of misfits being sent on adventures to investigate, spoilers here, paranormal activity. So it's mutants who are the outsiders.
It's
Ghostbuster mutants as an X-Men team. And you have Magic, who can pull things out of dimensions, including a magical flaming sword, which she uses to headlop a zombie.
This only book, one zombie?
Well, that's like the big reveal of her sword is just like a super headlopped, like it's an amazing page. Let me try to get to that, like right there.
Oh, okay.
All of a sudden, whack!
I was about to say, because zombies usually, there's never just one zombie.
I swear to God, one of them looks like Rogue. That's why I'm like stuck on this, because she's my favorite mutant.
It's not Rogue, unfortunately.
I know it's not Rogue, but she just looks like her.
This is a really like, I love the adventure stories. That's Richter.
Yeah, he's got like Rogue's colors.
Totally have Rogue's colors going on. Yeah, this is really, really cool. This is an absolute fun read. I think it was supposed to coincide with the movie's release, but we know that got pushed. But yeah, horror and the mutants totally works. Absolutely fantastic. Pick that one up.
Interesting.
And then one of my favorite books of the past 2 weeks is The Spider-King number one. This is written by Josh Vaughn with illustrations by Saman D'Armini. It's actually a individual issue prints of a miniseries that was done as a graphic novel and never put out as individual issues, but is being put out as individual issues now, and it is awesome. It's
just like a freaking roller coaster getting to where we need to be.
It's fantasy Vikings with an alien invasion.
All right.
With art that is a combination of Headlopper and Mike Mignola. It's awesome, cartoony, violent, badassery, and the hero is not following the normal pattern, and it was great.
Interesting.
But, yeah, so those are my solo reviews for now.
Did you read the graphic novel that it's based on?
No, I've never read it before. I didn't even know it was something. It's just reading the history of it.
Interesting. So. All right, well, what do you got for us, Kat?
My turn. So I've got Ghostbusters Crossing Over. It's issue number one.
Is it crossing over with?
Apparently, it's all the different Ghostbusters from all the different dimensions. So you've got
Apparently, there's a shit ton.
Apparently, there's a comic, because they reference a couple of them, which I'm assuming if you follow the Ghostbusters comics themselves, this would probably make more sense. But apparently, the Holtzman, who is my... probably because Kate McKinnon played her, but she's, like, insane and is great, and I love her. She is in, like, not the 1980s Ghostbusters, but she's in another dimension with another set of Ghostbusters, and you go to the 1980s Ghostbusters, and I'm very confused at the moment, and I feel like it's because I haven't been following their comics.
Right.
And it's not bad, but I feel like they even talk about, I think at one point, talking about when they teamed up with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And
hell yeah, that sounds great.
And so I think it's interesting. I liked Holtzman's character. She's still as insane as she was in the movie, which is fucking batshit.
I like the super cartoony art.
Right, it's pretty great. Yeah. But, yeah, it's just the beginning, and it looks like they're all going to cross, and probably some crazy thing's going to happen.
Well, and plot. Crossing over is also a reference to ghosts moving to the other side. Mm-hmm. So
it was interesting. I'll probably read the next one. I just feel a little confused. Yeah. I feel a little confused because I feel like since I haven't read the actual ones, I don't really necessarily get all the things that they're talking about.
My alphabet soup is warning me. It says, ooh. Mm. Those are Cheerios.
And then my other one is Star Wars Thrawn number 2. Still really good. I was half asleep when I read it. I suggest reading it when you're fully awake. Because I'm like, I think this is what's happening.
The first one was very dialogue heavy, so was there...
This one is very dialogue heavy as well. And it's a lot of the same thing of him moving the chess pieces and getting his way.
Man, that issue one was good.
This one's the same thing. You get to see him do it again, except now he's fucking with, like, even more higher up people.
Side note, we had a real big subscription issue, and it was one of the powers of the new system that we have, mm-hmm. because so many people bought it off the wall and added it to their subscriptions late that I had nowhere near enough to cover subscriptions. I was like, I need 8 more of these!
So, and then my final one is Vampironica. I loved this. It felt very short, though, and that's kind of how I felt about Jughead. So I think it's kind of like an Archie horror thing where they just feel very... There's not enough in this first issue.
Gotcha.
I guarantee there'll be more in the second issue. But this was awesome. It kind of gave me a Buffy the Vampire Slayer feel to it, and I dug all of it because the vampires are like... rip your face off looking vampires, like they remind me of, if you look at one of the first couple of panels, you get to see them, and they look like Buffy the Vampire Slayer vampires.
That's gorgeous,
right?
Is it Greg Smallwood and his wife?
Yes, it is.
That is freaking sweet.
Greg Smallwood is the one who, he not only helped write it, but he also did all the art, obviously.
So. That's what I was like, Greg Smallwood, he's an amazing artist.
But yeah, it's really pretty. I love the look of it, but...
This looks so cool!
But it's really awesome. I thought it was great. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it as much as I did, but I was like, I just got the nostalgia feels a minute for Buffy the Vampire Slayer looking at this artwork.
High school vampires, apparently that works.
Yeah.
It always does for some reason, except for when they fucking sparkle.
Yeah. As long as no werewolves come in and create an interspecies.
I honestly feel like there's going to be a cross in these dimensions where Jughead somehow manage to find each other, because I think that would be kind of cool.
They cross into the zombie dimension.
That would be fucking great. Yeah.
Which is what Afterlife with Archie is.
Just blood everywhere.
Okay, so with that being said, I totally forgot about this one. I'm going to do I guess like a 3-issue review before we start crossing over stuff. So,
well, 2-issue review and then we start destroying something.
I actually forgot I have this.
Yeah.
So,
why don't you leave with that, since that's not new? That's right. Yeah. It's been out for a bit.
No, it just came out.
Did it really? Oh, yeah. Okay.
I Actually, yeah, I'll start with it because I've been talking about it. So, first up, I have Islandborn by Juno Diaz with illustration by Leo Espinosa. This is not a comic book. This is a children's book. So I got it because Juno Diaz is one of my favorite authors of all time. Pulitzer Prize winner, Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, Drown, other things. And Leo Espinosa contributed to many magazines like The New Yorker, New York Times, etc., etc. This is honestly like a straight-up children's book, and I was watching an interview with Juno on Trevor Noah the other night where he's talking about it. And Trevor Noah was like, so what, like, gave you the inspiration to write a children's novel? Because, like, his stuff is very, very, like, sexual, very, like, he grew up Dominican in New York City and writes a lot about, like, this sort of cultural thing, like, masculinity, sexuality, all these things. And
that's a bit of a jump.
Yeah, and that's what Trevor was asking. I'm like, so why children's book? He's like, well, my nieces and like nephews, they asked me a while ago to write a book about them, and it's about 20 years late, so I'm sorry about that. He's like, they're all grown up with their own nieces. Is it only 20?
I think I can handle that.
Yeah, he's a really slow writer.
I mean, considering I would have been 4 at the time, so you know.
This is amazing. Honestly, like, I was reading it, and it is an amazing story. It's very short, as all children's books should be. The art in it is just gorgeous. Absolutely, absolutely beautiful. There's an interesting focus on hair in it, where, like, the people are very cartoony, but, like, the hair is very, like, very painstakingly illustrated, you can kind of tell. So sorry for a little pause right here. We had a slight technical difficulty, but anyway, continuing back with Islandborn. So the main plot of the story follows Lola, a middle school, elementary school girl who, grows up in an, immigrant community, and like everybody at her school is all born in different parts of the world, and so they are given the assignment to draw a picture of where they're originally from, but Lola left, quote, the island when she was too young to remember, so she goes around to everybody in her neighborhood and asks them what they remember about it. Everyone has different answers, all beautifully illustrated too, and it's kind of interesting that they take the parts of the island that they love so much here back to New York City with them. And so some people say, like, oh, the food, the music that's everywhere, the animals, the beaches, all this, the color, all this stuff, except when she goes and asks her superintendent about it, he tells her that the reason that everybody, because she's like, well, it sounds amazing, why did everybody leave? And he tells her that it was because of the monster, who, for most people who aren't familiar with Dominican history, this was Trujillo, the dictator.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, who was one of the worst dictators, like, we're talking, like, genocide of, like, Haitians, and, like, he's, like, I forget the exact, like, nickname of him, but it's something like the Raper in Chief, basically, because what he did with, like, the residents of the Dominican Republic's, like, women was just awful and terrible. Like, he would kill husbands just to, like, have his way with their wives and stuff like that. So it's, like, it's really interesting that he chose to include that bit in such a very lighthearted and super cute children's story.
It's the layers,
brushes away dust to find horrible ugly thing underneath.
Yeah, exactly. But it's very interesting because then it's a very dense book, honestly. Like, it's a very light read, it's a very quick fun read, but it's you can go back through with a fine bristled comb, or whatever my metaphor was with, and read a lot into this, and that's exactly what I was expecting from Juno Diaz, being such an amazing writer as he is. Juno, I'd love you so much if you ever want to come on the show and talk or just talk right. with me.
Yeah.
Like, feel free.
I gotta pick up this book, especially as a, you know, an immigrant from Puerto Rico, you know, so like the... Mm-hmm. Island aspect and family moving to New York, you know, from...
Yeah. I think anybody with any kind of close ties to immigrant backgrounds or immigrants or immigration in general would absolutely love this book.
Cool.
Especially in modern day stuff. He had a really interesting bit in this interview I was watching with him where he was with Trevor Noah, where Trevor Noah asked him about, like... coming to America and being like Americanized versus retaining your roots. And he's like, well, being a person is, it seems like it's this really weird buffet where you're laid out with all these different options, but then they're like, you can only pick one. And he's like, I want to fill my plate with a bunch of different stuff, man. Like,
yeah.
Why do I have to pick one thing? Very interesting. Great guy. Like I said, I love you.
yeah, I want
to. So. Anyway, moving on to, I guess, more comic book related things. I have in my hands right now, DC's Young Animals Eternity Girl number one, written by Magdalene, Visaggio, and art by Sunny Liu. And, I think it's a different Liu because it's spelled L-I-E-W.
Yeah, he's illustrated a bunch of stuff. He actually wrote... I want to say that he was on Dr. Fate in the New 52 run.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, this has... I guess I can see a little bit of elements from that. So I had to actually go look this up because, like, the way they paint her backstory in this mm-hmm. is so rich and vibrant. I was like, there's no way that this is, like, that she's a new character. Like, I was convinced that she's been around for, like, decades.
And no, that's not the case?
No, that's not the case. Like, she first appeared in the Milk Wars trilogy.
Oh, really?
And that's it. So, like, this is a very interesting series. I'm definitely going to continue reading it. Basically deals with a depressed, like, super woman. Like, she's this elemental kind of person that has, like, she's, like, unbreakable. She has, like, she can fly, like, energy projections. Like, she can't be killed in any way.
What?
She can, like, project herself, like... around, like, she can shapeshift, like...
What? So it's, like, just, like, everything.
Yeah, she has, like, almost every power. And I'm interested to see, like, as it progresses, where she holds up in the pantheon of DC heroes. Because right now, she seems like, if she wasn't suicidally depressed, she could be, like, one of the greatest heroes in DC.
Huh.
But it had, like... in a really interesting way, it deals with, like, she's tried to kill herself. It opens up with her talking to a therapist, and she's like, yeah, I try to jump about once a month, and, like, I tried, like, from, like, a bridge, she's like, I tried to hang myself,
what?
But I don't really need to breathe, and I cut my wrists, but I don't have blood, and...
It's like a god trying to kill themselves kind of deal.
Basically, this is like a slightly more, like, depression-fueled, like, I was getting, like, Mr. Miracle vibes from it, and...
That's high praise, too.
Yeah, really high praise, honestly. Like, it's... Like I said, the writing in it is just so good that I... like, had to actually look up, like, her Wikipedia. And I was like, she's been around forever, and now right. it's just getting a number one, I guess. Jeez. Oh, no, wait. Yeah. And it's just amazing. There's so much going on. I'm really excited to see, like, where specifically they take the series, because it could go a lot of different ways.
That's cool.
And all of them would be amazing.
Just figure out which direction it actually...
Yeah, which direction, or maybe no direction, which would also be kind of cool in its own way.
Very
cool. So yeah, Eternity Girl, definitely sticking with this one. Really interesting. And next I have something that's not so interesting at all. I have... this is Dry County number one, Image Comics with, let me see if I can find the title page here real quick. It just says a Lou Rossi comic, so I don't know
just one person just doing the whole thing?
If that's, yeah, one person doing the whole thing or not, which is kind of interesting because, oh, here it is. I was about to say that because that's the name of the main character. It's, oh, I guess it is. I don't know. I can't find. It might be Lou Rossi writing about himself as the main character.
Gotcha.
Because the main character's name is Lou Rossi. This is terrible. It's an awful issue one. It's a really shitty romance story about a guy who meets a girl and they fall in love, kind of. I don't see how he's, like, not an interesting person. She's not an interesting person.
That's why they fall in love. They suck together.
Yeah, I guess. There's no, like, interesting conflict that keeps this going through through a whole issue, let alone I have no idea how they would continue this as a series, because the uninteresting story that is issue one wraps itself up, seemingly. And so I don't care how this will continue, and it's just very poorly written, way too much exposition.
Oh, God.
So
are they trying to make you care about the character, but you can't because it sucks?
I guess, like, he's kind of like an alcoholic who, like, writes comics, I guess, and they're kind of trying to get you to care about him, but, like, I don't at all. Like, there's nothing at all about him that is at all interesting. And, he's not an interesting person. I don't see how he, like, even got this girl in the first place, because he's just, like, a nobody.
Is it one of those scenarios where it's kind of one of the, this is the perfect guy to be with kind of deals? Like, he has that, I don't know, stupid, boring high school bullshit thing.
I don't know. I don't even know about that. It's just so bad in every single way. Like, I don't even care anymore. I'm getting bored just talking about it.
Like, I'm being upset once again just because we're sitting here and we're talking about this.
Yeah, that I actually spent my time and money on that. It's an image. I'm kind of sad that you even, like, let that go out on the shelf under your title.
That's hilarious.
So
now you're going to go into something that was so much better that you totally enjoyed, right?
Yeah, so moving on to something that's so much more terrible. I have Betrothed, number one Aftershock Comics, written by Sean Lewis with art by Steve Yu? Ui? Yu? I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
I don't know if it's Wee, maybe?
Wee. I don't really care either, because I'm not going to continue with this one either. This is a terrible. We have this unbelievably forced Romeo and Juliet comparison going on, which has absolutely nothing to do with the main thing. Other than that, it's like two teenagers falling in love. I wouldn't even call it that. They are sexually interested in each other, from all I can tell.
Yeah, right.
This is a great example of what not to do when you're writing. I think this comic lays out every... If you break this comic down, the way they characterize the two main characters is unbelievably forced and unrealistic. The over-the-top forced metaphor pulls you out of the comic instead of giving you more into it. The ridiculous exposition of the bigger story going on is so poorly written and doesn't feel like real dialogue.
The other problem with this, too, is the fact that basically it's like, hey, here's this crazy thing going on. Care about these characters you know nothing about. And your first vision of them is the chick punching the dude in the face and him losing a tooth. And I'm just like, I don't...
Which was interesting.
To put it as bluntly...
That was honestly a very interesting intro.
To put it as bluntly as possible, I don't fucking care. Is basically what it's coming
out to. I thought that was really... Like I said, I thought that was a really interesting first page. And then instantly from there, it turns back around on itself and is like... it trying to explain why that is an interesting thing. This is like the big rule.
It does, like, it explains too much. Like, it keeps telling exactly. you why.
But that was the thing is, like, it sucks because I feel like I'm coming off like an image high right now after being, because I've been reading the Invincible comics. But, like, I feel like instead of shoving this down my throat in the first issue, can't you play it out in a couple issues? Make me care about the characters and how these weird things happen, and then
this would have benefited as using the storytelling trope of the flashback and actually start the story with them on the other planet and world already, like, as the leaders of the two armies, whatnot, like, and then bounce back to them meeting in high school.
That's exactly what I thought. As an issue one, I thought they could have cut out just about everything from this issue and started the story
a little bit further down the line.
So there's two major rules of writing that this comic breaks. One is show don't tell. This comic tells way too much and shows way too little. And two is start the story as close to the ending as you can. And this story starts way before it should.
I mean, it does the good storytelling thing of every good scene starts in the middle. You know, you're not like the beginning of the scene, like things That's are already true. Happening. But it makes the lead characters come off as so brash and unlikable.
I just don't care about them.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, well, when you see somebody getting punched in the face and then they're both having attitudes at each other and, like, being cocksure and asshole-y, why would you like them?
Yeah.
Like, what gives you this?
There's no, like, redeemable asshole-y quality.
No, exactly. Well, yeah.
Not, like, she's a lovable Raphael.
Right.
But that's the thing, though, is, like, in order to be, to, like, dislike them, I'd have to care about them. Well, I don't care about them.
I think they should have shown their love first. Like, if you were to show where they go after, like, deep into this journey where they really do care about each other, and then you say, and when they first met, and you see just decked with a tooth flying off, it's like, wait, what?
Like, I am all for couples who literally, like, when they talk to each other in public, you think they're arguing, because I fucking do that with my girlfriend, because it's hilarious, and it makes things awkward for everybody. I'm totally into that, obviously. I do it in my day-to-day life. But that, I don't know them. I get this bullshit story, well, you're head cheerleader. I'm like, I'm out.
You're a straight A student and a head cheerleader.
That's the challenge.
You don't say that. Yeah. As no friend tells their friend what
and
they do.
The
in
other
school.
Part of this too is you see a little bit of his flashback of him being some, like, sports star, and I'm just like, I don't care anymore. Yeah. I just wanted to, like, I'm done.
You
I didn't want to finish
it. You two were the best of the best in high school, but it's really pretty.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
It's got a really interesting, like, art style to it.
I do like the art. That is about all I got.
And the premise of, like, taking the Romeo and Juliet through the guise of science versus mysticism.
I can deal with that. That's cool. The idea is great, but they executed it so poorly. The art's great, and the idea is great. The execution is where it fell apart.
Bad first issue.
I think just, like, also from a writing standpoint, like, not every romance story has to be Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, my God.
Well, this one is definitely, like, it's saying that Romeo and Juliet is its jumping off point. Like, you can tell, like,
that was the thing that pissed me off even more.
It's star-crossed. That's what they're playing on, the star-crossed idea of fate.
And I hated that even more. I'm like, I don't personally enjoy in my life being told I'm, like, an idiot. I understand some people won't catch literary stuff like that. I'm not calling people idiots for that. I'm just saying some people won't catch that because you just don't. You
but
don't
it's,
need
like, not
to
something
have
to
it.
Catch because, like, there's not, other than the fact that they are, like, two, coming from two opposite sides and will,
but you don't,
I guess, fall in love, there's nothing else that would relate to Romeo and Juliet.
But that's the thing, is you don't need that either. You can do a star-crossed thing and not have to be comparable to Romeo and Juliet.
That's true. That's exactly what I was saying. Yeah. Not every romance story has to be Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, and so that's my thing.
Which every romance story is basically Romeo and Juliet, so we don't have to, like, have that.
I think when I read I'm Not Romeo, I think it's like he said, I'm not Romeo, obviously. I'm like, I want to jump out a window. Where is the window?
Yeah.
All
right. Let's move on.
Let's move on, please. What do you have for us, Matt or Kat or someone?
Somebody, let's just go away.
No. I have Mr. Miracle and his Dancing Penguins, number 7.
Ooh, Dancing Penguins.
Mr. Miracle, number 7, out of DC Comics, written by Tom King with art by Mitch Gerrits. Continuing the awesomeness that is Mr. Miracle, this is a hospital sequence of giving birth.
Yeah.
Over the course of 22 pages.
The whole thing is, yeah, 22 pages of Big Bertha giving birth.
Yep. It's, giving and birth. I like the Big Barda, like,
or Big Barda,
first name Big, last name Barda, when they're checking in.
Yeah.
Like and the that. Like the Furies being like surrogate moms to Big Barda is like really hilarious to me that they're like there in the hospital but they're like we are to kill you. And there's also weird revelations like the ending of the last issue and going into this one different planets, you know, like it literally different planets,
different times.
He's Highfather.
Yeah.
Scott Free is now the ruler of New Genesis.
Yep.
I
think that's his reaction to it too.
Yeah,
I guess.
Like I mean that's crazy. And then there's a lot of questions I think just every time I read through Mr. Miracle about what we're actually seeing and the dark side is stuff like what. Because
I think it's a really interesting just like. As far as like format goes for this, I think it's really interesting that issue number 6 was basically this super crazy epic escape sequence where they're killing people and running around and doing stuff while they're talking about just redoing their apartment the whole time. Whereas this one is them talking about this crazy super epic like dimensional war that's going on while they're just like in the hospital.
Yep. And then the knife.
Yeah.
Which, like, it's more than just a plot element. Like, it's a discussion element. It's a part of the history of Apocalypse and New Genesis. It's, like, the way that Tom King has chosen to weave elements of history of the New Gods into the story as being, like, mundane conversation. But you learn so many things. Like, there's some sweaty stuff in here.
Yeah.
You know, they're and talking about, like, the history.
Big Barda giving.
Right. And I have to shout out issue 6 because I didn't read that until I got issue 7. I read them back to back. And I have to talk about the issue 6. There's a sequence, and this is all Mitch Gerrard's, where it's a 2-page spread of story panels that you can read either one page at a time or straight across the 2 pages. It's the same thing. It reads with all of the dialogue hitting in the same time frame. Yet it spans across 2 pages or it's one in page read and then the second page read. And it blew my freaking mind that they were able to do something like that. And it's, Mr. Miracle is great. That is like
it's continuing.
It still
it's
makes
awesome,
me feel like I'm on drugs when I see this.
I really want to know what the end is because I just feel like we're running into a place where we're going to get real depressed.
Yeah.
Like as readers, we're going to be like, that's what's happening.
Considering that Darkseid is still showing up, stop destroying my insides.
Yeah.
What do you guys want to jump into now?
I guess X-Men Red, since we seem to both have it out.
Yeah. I didn't read issue 1 of X-Men. Okay, so this is X-Men Red.
Number 2,
written by Tom Taylor with art by...
Mohammed Asrar.
Thank you for that. I didn't read issue number 1. You guys were talking about it, so I just picked up issue 2. And I was like, if it's a good series, it should hook me anytime. And it did. I'm hooked. This is great.
Isn't it super annoying? All I did was, I'm pretty sure that we were talking shit, and I'm like, God, I hate eating my words right now.
Well, we were talking shit about just, like, X-Men's... stories in general, but this is a good X-Men story.
Well, I think we talked, like, it was shit about the philosophy, too. It's, like, just feeding us so much garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
I will say the last page that I got, I'm like, I didn't need to know this is what our team is going
to
be.
You don't need to know that? I do.
Okay, I want it to be revealed to me as each thing goes along.
I see something like that, and I see a special feature, and I go, that is making me smile in my inside, and those costumes are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to say this dude learning about his powers are freaking crazy. They talk about it in Wakanda, and it's
so want to read
it's
this.
So fucked.
Oh, that's him. Yeah, I missed that for a minute.
Yeah, since they were in Wakanda.
This is a gorgeous book too. Like,
I know, I really
like
it.
Really pretty.
Yeah, because they meet him in Wakanda, and they're like, yeah, he's as strong as Hulk, but it literally hurts him. I'm like, that's so fucking...
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to read this.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on... They say that he's in comparisons to the Hulk, and except his powers hurt him. And I'm like, that's so fucked. Keep reading.
So what are, like, the main, like, plot elements of this? Is she still, like, she's building the team right now, right?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. She's slowly gathering her team. I'm not super sure.
So basically, from what I understand after reading issue two, Jean Grey is trying to do some things with...
She's trying to make, like, a sovereign nation for mutants.
Yeah, a sovereign nation
for mutants. So they can have rights.
And so she's pulling characters that are associated particularly with, like, high positions or cultures.
She gets Sub-Mariner involved, and I know she gets the Black Panther involved as well because they agree with her. And she's still trying to pull that, but right now she's a fugitive because of...
She looks like she blew up somebody's head.
Yeah, she's set up for a murder, so now she's hiding out in Wakanda.
Mm-hmm.
Against, like, extradition, because they have, I guess, pretty lenient extradition laws, which the law is whatever the Black Panther says it is. So,
yeah, right.
And then we have another mutant, Trinary.
She doesn't go by that name, but you can see her in the back.
Yeah, it says it in the back what her name is, which is, I don't know, she has an interesting sort of subplot going on.
Well, I just love, what is it, Honey Badger? She's my new hero.
Yeah. Yeah, which, by the way, Honey Badger, best Wolverine so far. I know I keep saying that, but...
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's just a great story. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of, like, interesting subtext.
I was kind of hoping for, like, some Nightcrawler with some beard action in this, and I didn't get that. I was a little sad about that.
I see that. It looks like Remy LeBeau is going to be part of the story, which also makes me really happy.
Yeah, because he ends up, like, you get to the next page, and it's like a Remy LeBeau, and I'm like, all right, how does this work?
Who cares? Love it.
Right? Blow shit up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I'm just interested to see where the story goes. Yeah. That's all I have to say about that.
You want
to
jump into Prism Stalker?
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about Prism Stalker. So this is also image number one, written by Sloan... No, written and illustrated, I guess, by Sloan Leong? L-E-O-N-G. I'm not sure how to pronounce that one. This is a very... Firstly, it's just very interesting, beautiful artwork. Very striking right off the bat. And secondly, this is, like, a crazy, like, sci-fantasy story of, like, humans living on an asteroid where they're not the dominant sentient life form, and they're kind of like bred in a way to
they like harvest another life form's eggs
for that
purpose. You say that and all I can think, I'm sorry now, is fucking facehuggers for some goddamn reason.
No.
they're like, the eggs are a delicacy, so like people travel to get the eggs.
People, yes.
Other species travel to get the eggs, and I found myself reading this back and forth. Like, I would read, like, five pages, and then I would reread pages, like, one and two again.
Is there things that you felt like you were missing? Is that why you were doing it?
It's just so densely, like, written. This is what you want from, like, a world-building first issue. Yeah. There's so much, because it's, like, there's stuff that's referenced.
Is it going to overload the casual reader, though?
Yes.
Yeah, this is not a casual book.
This is not a casual book. There's a lot of stuff that happens that you're like, what the hell is that right? Even? And then
Patrick's like taking notes on his computer.
Well, you mentioned with Betrothed, the show not tell.
Yeah.
This shows.
This is all show and almost no tell. This is amazing storytelling, and the way it's set up is It's just great. This is the example of what good writing is.
Yeah.
Especially for world building sci fantasy with so much going on in it. Like, like, what happened? Like, I have so many questions, like, in a good way. Like, what happened to the human race? Why are they on this... Like, because it mentions they are from Earth originally, yep. So this isn't, like, some, like, crazy thing.
Well, and they were from Earth originally, but the lead character wasn't abducted from Earth, too. Like, no, from she some was other planet.
Born on... I thought she was, like, a second generation.
On the planet that they're on,
on
right
the
now?
Planet that they're on. At least that's what I got from
I it. Thought she was... See, and this is, like...
See, this is, like, book club worthy.
It is. It's really pages. Interesting. Like,
it's not even 30 pages, I'm assuming. It's probably, like, 20.
Yeah. There's also a soundtrack listing on the back. Like, there's yeah. Did you listen to any of the music?
I did not.
Is I want to re... I haven't done it. I want to reread the book with, like, the music going on in the background. Like, seeing if... Like what
kind of, you double check back the next time we talk about this stuff with doing that. Maybe
yeah,
take
that'd
some
be really
notes
interesting.
On that.
Yeah, it's this is really interesting. I'm definitely going to keep up with this. I don't really know.
I don't
else
like,
more to say about it.
Oh, and I don't
point.
Know what it is. It's so like psychedelic and lyrical too. Like it's a really
yeah.
It's like, a strange
it's psychedelic,
dream.
And I just start to zone out because that shit gets to me, and I'm like, well, I don't know what I'm reading.
It's really colorful. Like yeah. And it okay. makes you feel the, weird because of
I mean
the color
just like
choices.
Look at this first page.
That's see I'm like already visibly upset.
Yeah,
it's
the I think the
I can't handle that yeah. kind of stuff personally. It's just too much.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see where this goes and see what's happening.
Just looking through it again, I'm like
it's,
really
it's
excited.
It's like
yeah.
it basically be like the last time we talked about reviews with Wonder Woman and the Wonder Woman and Batman one. My complaint was it's too pretty.
It's
I
too
can't
pretty.
Focus, yeah. And that would be one of those ones where it's too pretty.
Yeah.
I can't focus.
Yeah,
I have the attention span of a goldfish.
Yeah, Prism Stalker number one. Definitely interested to see where that goes.
Okay. All right, we're gonna do a brief checkup here. So Kat and I started reading New Superman with issue 20, so mm-hmm. we picked up 21, and man, I'm glad I'm doing this.
Like, Aquaman! Just, Aquaman looks
cop
like,
told you, cop.
Right?
Looks like a fucking badass.
he does, like, that
Aquaman
final reveal.
Korea is, or I'm sorry, North Korea is a fucking badass.
I think...
He's
I
got
think,
a goddamn eye patch made of coral. I don't even know what to do with that.
The way Jean Luen Yang characterizes this all new character, the Aquaman of North Korea, in two issues.
Yeah,
awesome.
It sounds
the best characterization.
To me, I feel like
I've
he's trying
read.
To make him a villain too. Not a villain, but like
yeah, like there's this anti-hero aspect to him where it's like he's here.
Well, his quote unquote father is like they have ruined everything.
Well, it's like, and I feel like, this is just.
I don't know if he's like a samurai. I think he's probably closer resembled to a samurai.
Well, and I don't know, like,
I
don't know enough about, like, Korean culture.
I don't either.
And, you know, not to sound ignorant, to know, like, what, like, the warrior mythology is. Because I'm assuming that dragon.
Not to sound ignorant, that's like being like, I'm very ignorant of
yeah.
the culture. But
it's like, I really
I'll
don't.
Admit it.
I really don't know enough. And it's just like, I see that and the dragon sign.
This is something I was going to look up, but I just read this last night and a little bit. Like, if it's anything like the Wonder Woman of China's backstory, that is based in Chinese mythology, like classic Chinese mythology. So I have
saying.
A feeling that. The Aquaman.
Well, like, the thing is you should, when you bring him to, when he finally gets to roam around in China with her and he's just seeing all this stuff.
That's such a great, like, little bit. That was, like, one of my favorite bits of this whole issue is she, like, brings him a bowl of, like, traditional, like, soup and he's like, this is, I'm not worthy of this. This is something that only, like, the father, Kim Jong-il would.
So the one thing
and she was
and
like,
she's like, I paid 8 yuans for this, which I did the calculations for is $1.50.
Oh my god.
And so he's like,
well, no, the
this
one
is a delicacy made for like a king.
Yeah, for
well,
the father.
The thing
which
is,
yeah.
you see in one thing, and he says it in Korean because it's in red. Because I pay attention.
Oh my gosh! It's
so dogs in China eat better than people in North Korea.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a lot like, of like
it's like someone's feeding like their poodle like some teriyaki on a stick or something like that, and yeah.
Like how dense can an issue that is literally we're gonna save a dude and then introduce you to a cool character? But there's like dealing with superheroes making the mistake and letting someone be shot. There's the idea of like the cultural
I have a feeling pressures. This falls into mythology because I'm just looking it over again, and he's talking about the kingdom of Scylla, I believe, if I say it wrong. But the thing is, it's an ancient kingdom on the Korean Peninsula.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling this is rooted in some sort of mythology, and like you said, if they're anything like the other ones.
Yeah, it's a dense read. Like, there's a lot going on. Very well made. It doesn't feel too rushed. It doesn't feel too slow.
Whatever, they bring him out at the end, and I'm just like, oh my god.
And it's fun.
Yeah, like, it's
in general, it's just a fun issue.
This whole last page is like classic Silver Age Marvel splash page, you know? Like,
mm-hmm. Like the big reveal. This is definitely like a sort of like, issue one of Superman and the Justice League of China is very much like, this is the team, here's what's happening, let's go, boom.
I enjoy the fact that all like of their names have dashes in them.
Oh, the Batman.
The Batman, the Aquaman.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I just, when I was looking at it, I was like, Superman, and it has like the dash in it, I was like, what the hell? And then Batman, I was like, what the hell?
That Aquaman costume, and you can, though,
they
like,
have
totally
a similar relationship as well as Batman does to Superman
in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, this is a beautifully written series, and we're watching Brent Peebles as an artist come into his own.
It's like
as you go through it.
It's like if all the Justice League were not as like old. Like they're still like growing into their own. Like Wonder Woman in this is the only one that is like feels like a mature adult because she's
right. Actually,
been
you know what? This might be a little
too.
Bit of role reversal because you have the Batman of China saying you can't do this. We have a responsibility, and normally that's how Superman is with Batman. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
you might
but they're
have
still
a little
both
bit of
very young, and the Flash mm-hmm. is still very young.
Well, and like there's an interesting like Flash is an interesting gateway, being she's the American.
I forgot about that.
And there's like
she's the token American.
Yeah, and it's a funny thing because it's like kind of the brashness and like the. It's interesting that they made her the Flash. Mm-hmm. Because of, like, the snap decision-making that doesn't always work.
I enjoy the fact that it's purple, though. I dig that.
I love the costumes and the way the subtlety that the costumes connect. I talked about it last time. It's a great book.
It's just beautiful. Yeah. It's just pretty. Aquaman looks like a badass.
I told you to read it.
Yeah.
And now you guys are hooked, so.
Absolutely hooked.
You know.
You had me with Yin Yang S.
Alright, do you want to touch just quickly on Snagglepuss?
We can talk about Snagglepuss.
Because it's either going to be an hour-long conversation
or
a minute-long conversation,
right.
Which is, it's amazing. I'm glad it's not a three-part series, which I thought it was going to be initially.
No, I didn't really think you could do
that.
There's
way too much going in, and especially Kat and I were talking about just the inserts of, like, 50s pop culture.
Yeah, which I miss because I have this blank space in the 50s, 60s era because it's just a very...
It's
a very hard time for me to look at because, it sucks because I don't want to think about it, but I know what happened in the 50s and 60s with certain things, and it's just like...
Yeah, this is one to keep your... Wikipedia page open during to look up stuff. I had to pause multiple times to look up like some history pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
You get like Marilyn Monroe cheating on Joe DiMaggio with Arthur Miller.
Jeez.
Chilling in the Stonewall Inn.
Which is, I didn't catch that was Marilyn Monroe until she said Marilyn.
Oh, and then, like, the origin of Clint Eastwood as an actor, too.
Was it Clint? I didn't know who it was.
Yeah, and that's a great, because they keep saying, like, they just say Clint. Like,
did they say Clint?
Yeah, at one point, they call him Clint. And, like, Snagglepuss mentions, like, you're not a very good stage actor, but maybe you could try your hand at some westerns.
That's hilarious.
See, I thought it was probably way too far in the back then.
The his face.
Yeah.
Like, after you know it, you're like, well, of course that's Clint Eastwood's face.
Yeah, see, and I didn't think about that. The one part I did enjoy was him talking about the star and the actor aspect and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. But, I didn't remember seeing him call him Clint. I just wasn't sure who it was for a little bit. I thought it was somebody else, but
there's just one thing
that mark.
Where everyone's like, he's such a bad actor, and then Snagglepuss is says, tell Clint I need to see him in my office. That's the only mention of his first name. It's so dense, so awesome. Snagglepuss.
Well, I have to make one thing known, is, like, at the very end when they go, or is it the beginning, when they go to the bar is called the Stonewall.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you know anything about your gay history, that is where the, that's where the first riots for gay rights started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Stonewall Inn riots.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark Russell, man.
Yeah.
He's got a.
Yeah, they're walking and here. They talk in a little bit, and he's, and you see the name of it, yeah. The Stonewall, and I was like, yeah. Well, I don't know where this is going.
Yeah, exactly.
But this
that's another thing. I was like, I know the Stonewall Inn riots, had to Wikipedia, like, all that stuff to
I know
like,
a little bit
started.
About. I don't know a shit ton about them, but I, the one thing I do know is it's what. Made drag queens such a big thing in gay culture was yeah. The first person to throw, I think, I don't remember what it was, but to throw the rock per se was a drag queen.
Oh, and, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm super interested to see.
Like we could say, this could be ridiculous. And this could be an hour long conversation.
Oh my god, there's probably so many little tidbits of history that you miss that you don't even realize you're missing.
Per issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can end with White Knight then and just.
Heck yes, yeah. I guess.
So let's just do a quick. I don't really have too much to say about this, honestly. I
think
it's awesome.
For me, this is. Okay, so we're at Batman White Knight number 6, written and illustrated by Sean Murphy. And.
Yeah.
This, for me, was the prime example of when fan service is done by fans and done with love and care, it is absolutely fantastic. You feature the 1989 Batmobile as a story element, and it's just something that is a piece of eye candy, and it is just fantastic.
I was half asleep
when
I read this.
Yeah, there's like a reason they bring it in, too.
Yeah.
And it's like so amazing that he only... probably has like 2 panels worth of dialogue to mention why it's needed, and you're like, oh my god, it's so like, how are they gonna do this? Like, what are they going to do? And then
right.
Just bringing the Batmobile, like, oh my gosh, of course that's how they do
yep.
it.
The one thing I will say that I was shocked about is that Batgirl didn't agree to capturing Batman. She like lost her shit over it,
yeah.
Especially considering how much they argued and how out of control she thought he was, and all of a sudden she's like, but wait.
Well, and yeah, they're wholeheartedly opposed to like getting him and then
unmasking
him.
Him.
And
well, not,
even Nightwing didn't want the unmasking.
Well, yeah, because he said we're not doing this, and even Jack Napier is like, don't do it.
Yeah.
This is not a part of the deal.
Well, that's because my indication, I read that as Napier knows who he is. That's like there's no need to have that. Be
well, the other
thing.
Part of this is like I think the best part to this is watching Jack Napier literally
descend.
Not even descend, just beat the shit out of him.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Like, I sat on this page for a couple minutes and was looking at it, and the thing that I think strikes the most is he literally chokes him out with his own utility belt.
Yep. Do you also love the fact that all of the page is red? So it's.
Yeah.
It's the failure of Batman seeing the rage and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just builds up to it, and then. I can honestly say this because this keeps popping up in all of my comics with DC, and normally ads irritate the shit out of me, but
the Bendis
this one,
is coming.
Yeah, the Bendis is coming with the Superman. It's just, I want a poster of this in my room. So, you know, you'll enjoy the ads, or at least one of them.
Right. The big reveal at the end of this, I don't know what it means.
I don't either. The thing is you have to go back to a couple pages before that. You're taking too many is exactly what she says to him. So I don't know if that means that he's starting to build a tolerance to these drugs.
Right.
And that's going to be his downfall, is that tolerance, or he did this on purpose.
Yeah.
Because
maybe he's figured out that the antipsychotics, if they have a counteractive dose, if he takes too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like so.
So, you know, spoiler at the end, you see this moment in time where, you know, he's like deteriorating a little bit, and then you see the Joker and a bunch of guns.
Yep. So I wonder what the hell that's going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
On keeping on.
Yeah,
yeah.
Jesus.
That's all.
Keep
I have
the excitement
say
on this
is.
One.
Yeah, don't ruin it for us.
Cool. Well, we're going to end this quickly, so yeah, bye.
Bye.
Bye.